And we are back for another Retro Wrestling Podcast here on the Barber Share Network. My name is Chris Novak, joined, of course, by Chris Osborne and Robert O'Neill. Here with you today to talk about two pay-per-views from the years 1997 and 1998, respectively. So we're going back in time. And we'll be talking about two pay-per-views that happened in the month of May, although it will be June when you eventually listen to this. Those pay-per-views are Slamboree 1997 and Over the Edge 1998. Two, I would say, polar opposite types of shows. Slamboree was felt like was more of a big deal than Over the Edge, but we will get into why that is. Rob, Chris, how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty well. It's nice to be back. It feels like we haven't done one of these in quite some time. It's probably been, what, 4 or 5 weeks in reality? But yeah, it's nice to be back.
Yeah, it's always fun to do these. I love looking back at some of these pay-per-views and things that I've actually seen and haven't seen in forever. So yeah, glad to be back.
Yeah, well, we can just dive right in. All of our Observer stuff is from 1997 because we just did 1998 last time, so it would just be, you know, a bunch of repeat information. But April 14th, Randy Savage suffered at press time what was to believe been torn ligaments in his ankle in the match with Diamond Dallas Page at the pay-per-view on April 6th. May have blown the ankle doing his signature leap off the top rope with a double sledge. He's been doing it for years, but he's 44 now. So DDP and Savage might have to be put on the back burner, which it doesn't really end up happening like that. I mean, because they, you know, have the face-off at the pay-per-view, mm-hmm. and then I believe they wrestle at
the Bash.
Great American Bash.
Yes, so a great match at the Great American Ooh. Bash.
I don't know if Savage just works through it, or if he, you know, ends up being okay, or, you know. Rey Mysterio's wife gave birth to the couple's first child at 6:30 on April 5th, an 8-pound baby boy named Dominic. So, you know, had to include that.
Wow.
I didn't realize he was born in 1997, I don't think. Like, I thought he was, I guess that makes sense. He's, what, 24?
Yeah.
Yeah. It also doesn't feel like 1997 mm-hmm. was 24 years ago, it so that's the all, other no. thing. Like, you know. let's see here. From Phil Mushnick in the New York Post. Ted Turner should watch his mouth about last week's mass suicide being a good way to get rid of a few nuts. If not for America's Lunatic Fringe and the Disaffected, his WCW televised pro wrestling would be out of business. So, a lot going on there.
Jeez.
You know, I believe mass suicide was like a cult thing. They're trying to get out the comet. And yeah, I mean, you know, Phil Mushnick is just kind of an asshole.
Yeah, just a little bit.
All I mean, the time.
Jesus Christ.
New Jersey Governor Christine Whitman signed the bill eliminating the $100,000 tax on televised wrestling matches in the state. So I don't know how long that lasted because, you know, obviously they're there for WrestleMania, you know, 4 and 5, mm-hmm. and then they're back there for SummerSlam in 1998.
So it must have just been one.
Yeah, it's kind of a short thing. Term. I don't know why you do it. Like, all you're doing mm-hmm. is funneling them right to New York.
Yeah, it doesn't make any
they're
sense.
They're probably going to run New York most of the time anyway, but still, like,
exactly.
This is a weird thing to make them pay extra to run your state.
Yeah. I feel like they had like a press conference too with everybody about going back and everything and running the buildings again.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there was a press conference. Like it showed on like Raw or something.
That sounds right.
But yeah.
I mean,
but yeah, it's just stupid. Yeah. I mean, but eventually, you know, they corrected it. And it's the same thing they used to do. That's why, you know,
well, it's also like the indoor New Jersey venues at this time weren't particularly nice anyway. Like, I don't think the Prudential Center was built in 1997.
No, they only had the Continental Airlines Arena,
which isn't particularly nice.
And the Sovereign Bank Arena. I'm not sure when that was built in Trenton, but that was pretty much it besides your small venues on the campus of Rutgers and all the other small colleges.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, they weren't missing too much, I think, not being able to run there, but you know, you get a lot of people who are into the product who don't want to go to New York. So April 21st, future Hall of Famer Reggie White of the Super Bowl champion Green Bay Packers signed to appear in the May 18th Slamboree pay-per-view to face Steve McMichael in the semi-main event. They've been negotiating with him on and off since January when Kevin Green suggested they form a tag team. They were going to work a tag team with Jeff Jarrett to face Flair, Piper, and McMichael, but that match got changed a few times, which we'll talk about when we get into it, because it's kind of peak WCW. But yeah, you know, it's cool for them to bring in Reggie White and Kevin Green, and obviously not Dennis Rodman yet.
I think it's interesting that he wanted to be a tag team, just because they months prior, or even weeks prior, if it was in, you said it was in January.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting, just because they wound up facing each other in the conference championship game that year.
Yeah.
Of course, yeah. Reggie got the better of Kevin Green and the Carolina Panthers that day. Kerry Collins was at QB for the Panthers that year. So
yeah.
That was actually, because that was in, they'll obviously spotlight that in the main event. That was only Carolina's, like, I think, second year in existence.
Mm-hmm.
And they had made the conference title game. It was an interesting time, just because, like, you had that, and then the year before you had the Jaguars in their first year. They made the, I think it was either the conference title game, but I know they definitely upset Denver in, like, the divisional round two in Denver. So expansion teams were kind of all the rage. Kevin Green, this is not his first rodeo there, because I'm pretty sure he got there in 96.
Yeah, he worked there
his
last
first
year,
go around
a little
yeah.
bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then Reggie White, you know, debuted at Nitro from Philadelphia, so that's
which,
pretty cool.
Which also, if you've never watched that, what episode was that? What day? Does it say?
The news broke on April 10th and was carried on April 14th nationally. White debuted that night, so April 14th.
So April 14th, if you've never seen Nitro from April 14th, 1997, if you've never seen that segment where he shows up and, you know, goes after Mongo in the ring in Philadelphia, it's fantastic. I watched that segment, I think, for this first or second time a couple months ago when I was doing just a Nitro rewatch because I was bored. They set it up really well. And even though Reggie had gone to the Packers and left Philly, they still loved him.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Actually, that whole show was pretty good too, because I don't think Raven was there, but they did a thing with Public Enemy because they were in Philly, so they obviously played up the ECW stuff. So
mm-hmm.
That's just an all around great Nitro, I think.
No, I mean, it's cool to bring him in. It's cool to bring Kevin Green in. You know, it's cool to bring in Dennis Rodman,
because they're all big. They're all pretty big deals. Yeah. I mean, White obviously was. You know, he just got coronated in the Super Bowl, and he's like the all time sack.
Well, yeah,
you're the all time sack leader. So. Obviously, a big.
I mean, he just won the Super Bowl. I think he was either, I don't know if he was the defensive player of the year that year, but he was either that year or the next year. But I mean, he's an all timer already. He's going to, he's the first ballot Hall of Famer, and you're going to get him to wrestle on your show. That's huge. I mean, I can't imagine them getting, you know, even today, a top flight talent that's still active and still had good years left in him, too.
Yeah, no, it would be like
show up and do it.
It would be like if like this Joel Embiid stuff actually led to him having a match at SummerSlam, which
seriously.
It's not gonna. We
it's
all
not
know
gonna,
it's not
but
gonna.
It would like, be. That's a good comparison to right now.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like, I don't think they'd be able to bring in an active NFL player anymore just because of.
I only give that a little bit of caution, just because I mean, the way that they seem to be changing up their like hierarchy.
Yeah.
Trying to, I guess. You know, I don't want to say take themselves more seriously, but maybe be a little less carny.
Yeah, but do you think a team would clear a player going in and like?
I mean, that would probably be a
kind of the middle of the off season.
That would probably be a disaster. But if I mean, I doubt it would ever happen. But
yeah,
but then again, players do have a lot more control now over teams.
No, that's true.
So if a player wanted to do it,
we do have some WWF news here too. Sid has a herniated disc in his back from working out. It was handled clumsily on Raw because they didn't know about it, because he called the office over the weekend and no one was there, and Raw was taped on a Sunday, so no one knew, and he didn't actually call the building. He just called the office. So, you know, Sid's doing well.
Sounds like Sid. Yeah.
In other WWF news, Vader is in jail in Kuwait.
Oh.
Which isn't what you want.
No. Not too many places you want to be stuck in jail, and Kuwait's definitely not one of them.
I guess basically he was like on their morning show to promote their tour over there, and they did the whole, you know, is wrestling real question, and you know, he reacted the wrong way and ended up in jail in Kuwait.
And Undertaker just sits there and watches.
Yeah. That's the best part.
Oh, yeah. That's just perfect. He's just like, oh, what am I going to do? You know?
And, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much all of the Observer stuff we have for now. There's some more once we get into the show. But, yeah, we can get into Slamboree from Charlotte.
From Charlotte, yep.
Ric Flair's return to wrestling.
Mm-hmm. So we kick things off here on the television on the pay-per-view with going to Tony Schiavone, Bobby Heenan, and Dusty Rhodes. Mike Tenay and Lee Marshall will be jumping in as well on commentary. And Tenay appears for this first match between Steven Regal and the Ultimo Dragon for the World Television title.
Yes. He's no longer Lord Steven Regal.
He's no longer Lord Steven Regal, just Steven Regal.
Also is probably the biggest from a weight perspective that he's ever been in his career at this point. He's large.
Yeah. Yeah. Either that or right when he gets to WWF.
Yeah.
Like, he's pretty big. Yeah, he gets bloated.
So Ultimo Dragon's interesting because, you know, for a long time, I only knew him from the, you know, 6 months or whatever he was on SmackDown. So you go back and watch him when he actually gave a shit. He's really good.
Yeah, he's like, he was one of my favorites when I would watch WCW stuff, like for the cruiserweights and everything. Like, I love that they gave him more of an opportunity to wrestle people in the other weight classes, but mm-hmm. he's innovative. Yeah, just very pops.
I do like how his entire WWE run was basically he wanted to work WrestleMania at the Garden, and then he did. And then, you know, he's done.
He's done. Yeah. Get in, get out, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I was a little curious why they had so many guest announcers for these matches, but it's because Dusty Rhodes not good at commentary.
Yeah, he's...
Well, yeah.
He's an adventure.
Yeah.
Well, that and you had, you know, Tanay always did anything with the cruiserweights because nobody else knows anything about anything that these guys are actually doing, so...
And then kind of on that note, and kind of like you talked about earlier, where Ultimo Dragon got to work with different weight classes, you know, Schiavone and Tenay bring that up where he's, you know, working differently than he would against cruiserweight. I thought that was pretty cool to bring that up and that, you know, he actually does that as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely. So they continued on. Sonny Ono threw some kicks on Regal while Dragon distracted the ref. Then he got mad at him for it. Ono kicked Regal again. Dragon got mad. Ono kicked him. Regal put him in the Regal stretch to win the title. The crowd was pretty hot for the title change.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was surprised at the pop for Regal putting him in the stretch. Like, I was like, whoa, okay. These people are onto it.
Yeah. And then we move on to Luna Vachon against Medusa. And you know what? It's not a bad match.
No.
You know, it's
no. For a 1997 women's match, it's not bad at all.
They get like 6 minutes and they kind of just go for it. And it was good. Heenan said her name is Luna, what do you think that means? And Lee Marshall said it means moon, and Heenan said it means lunatic.
I also think too, like, having Bobby Heenan and trying to put Dusty Rhodes like on the same commentary is a little much. Like, that's probably too why they had to sub out so many people, because I mean, you can only have Bobby saying so many one-liners and Dusty trying to get in, you know, his own little licks and everything.
Yeah. Luna went for a splash from the top rope, and Medusa moved and got up and hit a German suplex. Got the victory. So, you know.
Yep. So, Mean Gene's hotline plugs tonight were, there's an interim change in talent coordination at WCW, plus somebody may be leaving WCW? Probably a bit harder to sell the hotline, man. Come on.
Come on.
Come on.
I'm not calling to hear about either of those. I guess maybe to see who's leaving, but... end up being anyone.
I was gonna say, does anyone end up actually leaving?
Based on what is
I
it?
I doubt it.
The middle of 1997, no one notable.
No, because WCW pulled in people in the middle of 1997. They didn't let anyone really go.
Yeah, because I mean, you just kind of think of the WWF main event stuff. It's mostly the Hart Foundation and
Jarrett doesn't come back until next April.
Yeah.
That's what I thought, because I know he came back and it was during a segment where Austin like got him with a stunner or something.
Yeah. So, and Regal doesn't leave yet, I don't believe. So, yeah.
No. Try harder, man. So Gene was then interrupted by Randy Savage and Miss Elizabeth. I liked Savage's shirt.
Yes.
It was simplistic. Savage said a lot in his promo.
Yeah, kind of an incoherent promo, but all good.
He's doing his best warrior impression.
DDP comes in with a crutch, and Savage retreats, and Bischoff calls out the rest of the NWO to come help him. And Paige says that Savage won't fight him because there's no one that can sneak up from behind. And Savage also probably can't fight because he's got to go to Hogan's house and wash his car and kiss his ass.
That antagonizes him. They start fighting. Paige is able to hold them off, but then Scott Norton comes in and he starts attacking him pretty hard, gets him in the hip, in the ribs. They continue to beat him down, and then the Giant comes down to make the save.
Yeah.
So all in all, a good segment for what they were dealing with at the time with Savage's injury.
Yeah. And also, DDP is very good.
Yes, he is, obviously.
Yeah. Very good and very, very over.
So. Yes, he's over like Rover. He's very good. And these next few months that he feuds with Savage makes his career.
Yeah.
Pretty much. This is a career-making time for DDP at this point.
Yeah. Rey Mysterio is in action against Yuji Yasuroka. And, Rey gets the win. Springboard Hurricane Rana, it was a good match. It was 15 minutes,
I just hate, though, that, like, Yuji's first match in WCW is literally the day before that's shown on Saturday night. Like, give these guys some... give them a little something. Like, why is Rey fighting a guy that's going... like, it's cold to the audience, and you wonder why, like, you know, the cruiserweights don't get over. They're not fighting anybody that anybody knows.
Yeah, that's a good point. Fair enough. Then we move on to Glacier against Mortis,
aka Chris King.
Yes.
If you are unfamiliar with that.
They basically just wanted to push a TV angle here.
Yeah.
Because
Ernest Miller came out.
Well, what's his name comes out too?
Yeah.
Crush.
Wrath. Yeah.
Wrath. Yeah, not Crush. Adam Bomb.
Yeah. There we go. And so he interferes after 2 minutes, and Glacier wins by disqualification. And then Fan comes in, and the Fan is Ernest Miller. And then Mean Gene comes to tell us again that a key member of WCW is ready to hit the road.
Okay.
Mortis and Glacier, can you imagine if this was now and the cinematic match you could have had between the two?
Oh, yeah, that would have
been great. Oh, my God. Yeah, no, that would have been very good.
I just want one more point. I love how Ernest Miller comes in, and somehow Tony Schiavone knows all about kickboxing and how he's a karate champion.
That's good stuff. We move on to Jeff Jarrett against Dean Malenko for the WCW United States Championship. Dean Malenko tries to take out Jarrett's leg, so he can't do the figure four. That makes sense.
Yep.
Deborah checks in on Jeff while he's on the outside, but Mongo comes out, throws Jeff back in the ring.
He can help himself, is what he said, or something to that effect.
Yep, so Mongo and Deborah leave together, and Dean Malenko gets the victory.
I tapped out on this match after about 3 minutes. I love Jeff Jarrett's podcast. Like, I think it's pretty good. Like, he's a great storyteller, but I can't watch his wrestling work, like, at least pre-TNA. Like, I like some of his TNA stuff, but... man, I cannot make it through a match of his anymore.
Wow. So we have a Jarrett match on our other show too, so.
Oh yeah, I know.
We move on to Mang against Chris Benoit in a death match, which kind of sounds like a last man standing match, but then it ends up that, you know, Benoit just kind of gives up.
Mm-hmm.
It's awkward because he's with Nancy. It's not pleasant to watch.
No.
You know. Yeah.
Mang should have finished the job.
Exactly. Mang got the win with the nerve hold. I don't know. It feels like every match on this show went longer than it needed to. And that's part of the problem.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with that.
We move on again to the Steiners against Hugh Morris and Conan. It was pretty fun. You know, Steiner's got the win. they want a tag title shot. So good luck to them.
Well, yeah, they want a tag title shot, but from what I remember about 97 in the tag division, things are about to get very messy. Very, very messy. And then we move on to, well, actually after the match, Conan seemed to have left the Dungeon of Doom or what have you.
I mean, I don't blame him.
I don't either.
You know,
but he's about
actually,
to...
I had no recollection. I had no recollection that he was actually in that to begin with. Like,
yeah,
when he came out, I was like, why is he with them?
Yeah, no, he was with them for about a couple of months from what I remember.
I kind of forgot they were still doing the Dungeon of Doom in 1997.
Well, yeah, because it was mostly, and it will soon eventually just become, you know, the gateway for the Benoit Sullivan feud that's about to end.
It's awkward.
It's very awkward. Yeah, because I remember in a few months, they make Benoit like go through everybody. Which includes Meng again, which includes the Barbarian.
Yeah.
And then he just has to get through them to get to Sullivan. I remember a famous beatdown that he had where I think they were in Boston where Sullivan is from. They did an angle with Mean Gene up near the stage. Benoit got beat up even by Jackie, who was there. Jacqueline, that is, of course, who was there.
Yeah. Then it's time for a co-main event. Steve McMichael against Reggie White. Reggie just won the 1997 Super Bowl with the Green Bay Packers, which is just one of two Packers Super Bowls in the last 30 years, despite having Hall of Fame quarterbacks the entire time. I thought that was interesting.
How many more than the Bears in 30 years?
You know. We don't have to get into that, but...
Just wait. Wait till Jordan Love makes it three. Three Hall of Famers.
Oh, God. You know, I didn't look this up, but commentary said that they were teammates, and I don't... When would they have been teammates?
Yeah.
I
think Reggie's first year in Green Bay, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah, because Mongo went to the Packers in 1994, so I think that was Reggie's second season there.
Second year.
Yeah, he was there in 94.
1994 had to be one of Mongo's last years, right?
It was his last year as player, yeah.
Because he's on Nitro from the start. Right?
Yeah.
He's on commentary,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. His last season was with the Packers. Just like Jim McMahon was on with the Packers also.
Yes.
Well, and both of them were at SummerSlam, or not SummerSlam, WrestleMania for
LT. Yeah. Yep.
So.
Yep, they were.
That is correct. I mean, it was a good match. It was too long, but, you know, a lot of the length was from just kind of doing theatric sort of things where, you know, hiding that neither of them were particularly good.
Yeah, they did a lot of gimmicking with White, but they made it a big deal when, you know, he was, like, drop kicking and clotheslining and suplexing, splashing, all that.
Yeah.
I did like the touch of him wearing the Packers pants.
Yeah, those are cool.
I did notice that. And the Packers, like, penny.
Mongo went to leave and Gilbert Brown came out and dragged him back into the ring.
We love the Gravedigger. That was fantastic. I love Gilbert.
Yeah, that was good stuff. Mongo kept working the knee because he was going to hit a figure four. And then eventually Jarrett comes out and gives Mongo a briefcase and he hits Reggie White with it and gets the win.
Yep. Halliburton.
Yes.
Yeah. I like this. I know I listened to, I think, just a little bit of Bischoff's podcast about this pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. And like, the lack of knowledge that Bischoff has about how great of a player Reggie Brown is sort of insulting because he's like, I think he was an all pro. I think he was like, you know, pretty good player. And it wasn't being like sarcastic or anything like that. It was just like, do you not realize that this guy is like one of the greatest defensemen ever? And he says that Reggie throws like the worst clotheslines. And I'm thinking he thinks that his clubbing move that he does
because I was surprised and a little disappointed that they didn't recognize it. That was his hump move. It was his signature move to get past offensive linemen to sack the QB.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I first saw that, I'm like, exactly. Oh, that's the hump move. And they didn't really say anything about it.
Yeah, but the height that Reggie gets on the drop kick is amazing for it a guy that size.
Yeah.
And then Mongo has a great piece of trash talk. He says, "Jesus may have your soul, but I got your ass," while he's doing an abdominal stretch to him.
Okay. So let's get into the main event. So Kevin Nash and Roddy Piper don't like each other.
Oh, wow. Because in weeks prior, didn't Nash,
they were kind of shooting on each
other. That's what I was gonna say. Yeah, because this was the potholes promo, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I thought.
Okay, so a couple big things about this match is originally they were gonna have Flair and Piper and Kevin Green lose, which is stupid.
That's very stupid.
They shouldn't do that. It's in Charlotte, you know.
I mean, they're about to do that to Flair anyway in War Games.
And Piper had an issue with it because, you know, it's in Charlotte and Flair's back. And Flair's issue was that he didn't think that Sean Waltman should be on the other team. So I didn't really look into why Hogan wasn't, you know, on the other team. He's probably, you know,
Wasn't he filming a movie? Yeah. I'm pretty sure he was filming a movie. That's why he wasn't on the show at all.
You know,
it was either he was filming a movie or he was filming that fucking TV show that TNT did.
Oh yeah,
I know which one.
Creative control, brother. So the NWO guys weren't happy about that because Hall and Nash didn't want to actually, you know, do work, and you know, Sean Waltman was willing to take bumps and stuff. So, but the NWO also had creative control, but so did Piper. So. Here's where you run into a bit of an issue. And basically it ends with Piper trying to fight Kevin Nash. Which I can't imagine it went well for him.
Probably not. Also, it was Assault on Devil's Island.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I was thinking of.
Yes. So a lot going on here. And they still, I think, were mad at each other up until, you know, Piper passed away. So,
yeah,
not ideal.
No.
But anyway, get into the match here. Michael Buffer's here. So that sucks. And then Flair and Kevin Green both come out, and the crowd is just losing their shit for both of them.
Oh, yeah. Piper gets a big pop also, but
yeah,
Green got a monster pop.
Also, the initial observation is that Kevin Green could have been a full-time wrestler. He's very good.
Yes. He's very good.
Easily.
He's probably just getting by on, you know, athleticism, which can go a long way.
Yeah. But... Because you watch him, he has a distinct personality. And he's riled up in the beginning of the match, and he gets the crowd all fired up. So he's got that working for him, too.
Yeah. Yeah, so kind of late in the match, Piper tags in, but the ref doesn't see it. So Piper just punches the ref out, and then all six guys kind of brawl for a little bit. Flair puts Hall in the figure four. Piper takes out Nash, and then Kevin Green takes out Waltman, and all three get the pin on the other three for the babyface victory. At one point, Kevin Green was asked to turn on Flair and Piper and join the NWO in Charlotte, but Green nicks that angle. Why do they want him to either lose or look bad in...
I don't know.
It's the same reason that for a while they always had people in WWE losing their hometown. Got to get that heat, brother.
It's different, though. Like, this guy has to still live here and work here all the time. These other guys are going to be on the road, you know, right after the show. He's here full time.
Well, that and, like, why does the NWO have to win everything?
Yeah, exactly. Like, they don't have to win everything.
Give them something to trip over. Like, got to give WCW something. Otherwise, like, what's the point? Why would I think that they could ever win?
Well, yeah.
And I mean, I guess you could think, okay, well, Sting's coming, you know, and whatnot. But, like, geez, I still got to wait, like, you know, six more months for that.
Yeah, where is Sting on this show? Is he still...
Yeah, he's still hiding in obscurity because it was 2 months prior he finally showed up at Uncensored.
Yes.
And then he's just been chilling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah, there's a lot of people not on the show. I just wonder, like, there's no Luger. I don't know what Luger's doing. The Giant came out. So that's that. But yeah, I mean, no Hogan, but you already said he's shooting a movie.
Yep.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I just don't understand Flair's objection to Waltman being in it. Like, especially if you're going to win, but like, who else are you going to take? Who else is going to take bumps for you? Like, seriously. Yeah.
I mean,
I guess he just didn't like him.
Well, then that's fair, I guess. But if he's like, oh, he's not, you know, ready to be on this stage, but someone's got to, you know, take the fall and look good. Because, again, Hall and Nash aren't taking bumps.
Yeah. I mean, who's going to work, you know, a 20-minute match? Who's going to work the majority of it? Unless you're going to work from underneath the whole time.
Mm-hmm. The show was almost universally well-received. Saw Flair and Kevin Green of the Carolina Panthers and Roddy Piper defeat the NWO. There have been numerous ideas for the main event, including Flair and Green on opposite sides of the ring due to the Steve McMichael-Kevin Green angle from last year, since McMichael's a horseman, but they decided to just go with two hometown heroes. When Hulk Hogan decided his movie commitments wouldn't allow him to make the date, or whatever his real reason may have been, Hall and Nash suggested Waltman, an idea that Flair and Piper were not happy about. And then they took shots at each other on Nitro, kind of like we just talked about. And Hall and Nash will get their win back, most likely, at the Great American Bash in Moline. So, that's good. Keep everyone happy. Yeah, then we can move to Over the Edge, unless you guys have anything else here.
Nope.
No, I'm good.
And, yeah, so like I said, we don't really have any news or notes, nope. So we can just jump right in from, the Mecca in Milwaukee.
Indeed.
Home of King of the Ring 1996 and, you know, various other shows.
Yep.
Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler are the hosts. I like the set. It's got all
sets cool. Yep.
Cars and stuff on it. And we're just jumping right into LOD 2000 against the DOA.
Including draws.
Yes.
And draws is able to snuff out the quote unquote twin magic from DOA, which leads to Animal winning with a power slam on Skull. And Hawk doesn't seem too thrilled.
No. Well, you know.
Also, Hawk's like face paint looked like. I couldn't even like identify. It was very Ultimate Warrior life.
Yeah,
well, what I noticed.
You know, LOD 2000, not great.
They peaked at Summer. Summer, they peaked at WrestleMania, and that's it.
Yeah. And then The Rock is here, so we're doing a promo segment on pay per view.
They had to get The Rock on this show. They should.
Well, he has a match later too.
I know. But still, you gotta.
Yeah.
It's interesting because they do this on this show, and then like the one we just the WCW show we just did, they had the Savage and PDP like segment. So it's a little weird. I don't know. Maybe it's more of a '90s thing that I've totally blocked out. But yeah, like it seemed really out of place because I was like, okay, so he's having his match right now, and they're like, no, he's scheduled for later. I don't have this in my rundown.
It would just be weird if like you know. Drew McIntyre comes out and cuts a 15-minute Raw promo in the middle of a pay-per-view. But, I mean, it is The Rock, so I get it.
Yeah.
Says he knows that they want to know how he feels about the beer capital of the world, but you don't become a blue chipper and an Intercontinental Champion by stuffing down beer and bratwurst every day. And then eventually Farouk comes out and they brawl for a little bit, and then Farouk pile drives him onto a chair before the rest of the Nation Domination can come out, so Rock is leaving on a stretcher, but Commissioner Slaughter says he's still defending his title tonight.
I love that the Nation is the one that's like actually putting him on there. It's like, oh yeah, Owen Hart can be the one to. We don't need medical people to put on a neck brace or to move him to a stretcher or anything. Owen will do.
Yeah. Michael Cole wants to know if this is the final time that Stone Cold is going to go to the ring as WWF champion. And Stone Cold says it doesn't make a difference that the deck is stacked against him. He's going to be champion when the match is over, but he still hasn't found anyone to make sure Vince calls it down the middle. Well, hopefully he finds someone.
Yeah, hopefully he finds somebody.
Then we get Jeff Jarrett against Steve Blackman. Always nice to see Jeff Jarrett. Tennessee Lee does some hat face distractions, which, you know, you should definitely have moves centered around hats. I mean, I was kind of curious why the crowd didn't like it, but at the same time, maybe there's some merit to Jeff Jarrett just isn't fun to watch work.
Yeah. I remember because I actually totally forgot that he came back as the Double J, like country singer type character again. Like I've totally blank that out of my mind, even though I think we had that on the last podcast we did too.
Yeah.
But like after when he gets down to the buzz cut, I feel like he gets better. I don't know. Maybe that's just me hoping that I don't truly hate all of Jeff Jarrett's work pre-TNA, but I feel like he has to have gotten better at some point where I didn't find him totally unwatchable.
Well, yeah, because I mean, like, the Good Housekeeping match is actually good. That's the thing. Like, so.
Yeah. That's the one that sticks out to me, too. I'm like, okay, I know that. I remember that one. But that's, you know, there's a lot of smoke and mirrors. It's a lot of, you know, stuff going on in that match that just, you know, it's not a true, like, one-on-one wrestling match. I feel like I can't think of any one-on-one wrestling match that of Jeff Jarrett's that I'm like, I want to go back and watch that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure on, like, 2000 WCW, he was good. He was a champion for a decent amount of time. So, you know.
We'll find one. I'll find one.
Steve Blackman hits Jarrett with a martial arts stick, but Jarrett gets feet on the ropes, and then Tennessee Lee gets a stick and hits Blackman with it, and Jarrett gets a pin. So, healing, man.
Indeed. Then we get Sable versus Mark Merrill in an intergender match. If Sable wins, she's free from managing Mark Merrill. However, if she loses, she's done with the WWF. Merrill said that someone could fight in Sable's place, but she wanted to do it herself. Said the business has torn them apart and he's tired of it, so he lays down and tells Sable to pin him. She does, but he rolls over at two and pins her. That Merrill then leads a crowd in a rendition of Na 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 na, hey hey goodbye, which is Vince's favorite song.
It is.
And Sable leaves.
Also,
it's a good song.
It's a very good song. I mean, she'll also be back. She's not going anywhere.
No, she's not going.
No.
She's gonna win the title.
Yeah, and they're doing the bikini contest the next month at Fully Loaded.
Exactly.
That bikini contest.
Yes.
You know the one.
Doc Hendricks tells Rock that Slaughter says that Rock has to face Farouk tonight, even though he's injured at the moment. You know what? That doesn't seem fair.
Yeah, it does not.
And
we get Kai and Tai against Bradshaw and Taka Michinoku, who
what a team.
King called Taka Michinoku. I think either on this show or the next show. I forgot which one it was, but he definitely called him that.
This match was a lot better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
You know, Bradshaw gets a hot tag and just messes all three of them up. Also, Dick to Go is very good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's also not how you pronounce his name, but that's how Bruce and Conrad say it. So it's just in my brain now. Dick Togo.
Yeah, Togo.
Dick to Go.
Do you think they sold Bradshaw on like all of this because they were like, well, you just get to beat up small guys?
Like, exactly.
We're just going to let you hit three small guys the whole time.
Dick Togo hits Taka with the senton, gets the win, and you know the numbers are just too much to overcome. So
indeed.
This is our unannounced bonus match as
yes.
well. So
yes, it was.
Got that on pay-per-view.
Yep. They always pulled that a lot. Honestly, both promotions pulled that a lot.
Yeah.
And ECW did a lot of impromptu matches as well.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed to just be a thrill back then. You never know what you're gonna see.
Yeah. You know, they run the I'm Not a Real Athlete commercial.
Which is good.
Good stuff. Still very good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's time for Farouk against The Rock.
And
the Intercontinental Championship.
JR would like you to know that both these men were All-Americans in college and played in the Orange Bowl.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or,
I mean, Ron Simmons is a College Football Hall of Famer, too. So
Ron Simmons finished, like, seventh in Heisman voting.
Yeah.
Year.
Yeah.
He's absurd.
Yes.
Honestly, I didn't even put it together that it's FSU versus U of M.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That too. Yeah. Up in freaking Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, did they wrestle at Unforgiven? I think they did.
Farouk got kicked out of the Nation of Domination.
Yeah.
So they almost had to have wrestled at Unforgiven.
So they wrestled in freaking Greensboro and Milwaukee, even though it was, again, FSU against Miami. I know that wasn't necessarily like their, you know, their thinking, but like you put that in one of those places in Florida, that would have been pretty hot.
More times than we've gotten FSU Miami in the ACC championship. So
there it is.
despite them loading up the division. So you get that matchup. Yes. They've never gotten it. Rock's music plays and he doesn't come out, and then it happens again, and Slaughter comes out. There's a 10-second countdown, and then The Rock does come out. The match starts, and Rock is still in a neck brace. Farouk hits him with it for a little bit, and then Farouk gets a pin, but Rock's foot was on the ropes, so Rock takes advantage of it and rolls it up and puts his feet on the ropes again for leverage and gets the win, and then Farouk hits him with two pile drivers.
Yes.
That was like one of the worst looking finishes, with the whole Rock's foot on the rope, like no production catches it.
No,
like it's just so the spine buster looked bad. Like just everything about that was just so awful.
Yes. And then we move on to Kane against Vader in a mask versus mask match, and it is not good.
It's not.
No.
Jerry Lawler says when he first saw Vader, he had some sort of elephant mask that he wore to the ring, which, yes, that's a better version of Vader. The ref is distracted, and Vader hits Kane with a wrench, and then he goes for a moonsault, but Kane moves and hits a tombstone, which it's impressive to hit a tombstone on Vader.
Oh, yeah.
At this point, because he's very large. And basically, the whole match, you know, JR and King are like, oh, you know, Kane probably looks weird, but Vader probably looks really weird too. And Vader had taken his mask off probably like 30 different times at this point between WCW and WWF.
WCW, WWF, Boy Meets World. I mean, it's not like he's never been seen maskless before, and it's not like his mask was covering up anything, anyways.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you can make out what he looked like.
Yeah. Like, oh, he's probably got, like, all kinds of plastic surgery scars. Then he takes his mask off, and he's just a regular-looking big white dude.
Who proceeded to call himself a fat piece of shit.
Yeah.
Big fan of calling himself a fat piece of shit.
You know,
Vader, self-deprecation.
Vader time is over, which it pretty much is after this.
So I did like, though, the best thing is Paul Bearer wearing Vader's mask. And doing the little shuffle, like the Vader shuffle. That's great.
So then they honor Mad Dog Vachon and the Crusher.
And Lawler just kind of buried Mad Dog Vachon the entire time.
Yeah.
Like literally the entire time that he was talking, Lawler kept like chirping.
And then they both kind of beat up Jerry Lawler, I guess, if you want to call it that. Just a real...
fucking hilarious. He took Vachon's leg, and then the Crusher started going after him.
Yeah. Just a real mess.
Like, who do you think laid that out? That's what producer was like, all right, we're going to go. This is what we're going to do. Like, I'm sure Mad Dog was, like, the one, like, you know, trying to get him to do it, too. Because I know he did that with the, was it Diesel and Sean or some... one of the pay-per-views that he did it to, like at In Your House, like 2 years back too. But yeah, I just don't know who thinks like, oh, this will be great.
Yeah. We move on to DX against the Nation of Domination. You know, Billy and Road Dogg and Triple H all get their shit in on the mic. Crowd loves it. Get Owen, Mustafa, and D'Lo representing the Nation tonight. And Jim Ross would like you to know that Mustafa is a former McDonald's All-American.
Is that correct?
You know, I had never heard that before, but
because I saw that he was that he played football at the University of Nevada, but they weren't doing McDonald's All-American is for basketball.
Yeah, and I don't know like when they started the McDonald's
All-American. I don't know when they started that either.
You know, I'm not sure. Be honest with you, I don't know. Like you said, he was an offensive tackle.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't say that he was. So it's JR lying.
Mm. I don't know though, man. JR knows like the high school athletic career of everyone on the roster. Yeah,
exactly. So maybe he was. The crowd does not like Owen Hart, by the way.
No.
It's a far cry from how he's treated at Breakdown a few months later.
Yes. Also, we did not need 20 minutes of this.
We did not. We did not.
The ref goes down and Owen hits a pedigree on Triple H's European title, and the ref comes to and covers, and Nation get the victory. This feud will continue, leading up to where DX impersonates them, which you can't find anywhere now because it's very problematic. And also, People thought that they were going to take everything off of Peacock once they took that off, but it's just that, because that's very bad.
Yeah.
Get a video for Austin against Dude Love. Vince has stacked the deck because Pat Patterson and Gerald Briscoe are the guest timekeeper and announcer. Vince is a special referee.
But so he's going to be very unbiased.
Yes. And he makes sure to note that only his hand can count 1, 2, 3. So it's time for Dude Love against Stone Cold. And Howard Finkel introduces Pat Patterson first, and he's got a bunch of note cards.
It's a freaking hilarious intro.
And then Pat does the same thing for Briscoe. And it was then when I realized that they were taking shots at Michael Buffer. And I loved it. With the note cards and just talking forever.
Well, even like for Briscoe's, they like go over like all the things for the body shop. They point to the phone number that's on the card or on the car, and just like, yeah, especially because it's Pat, so he's got that Montreal accent, that French accent going and stuff. It's just, it's great. I loved it.
Dude Love comes out. You know, he's got his teeth in. He's looking corporate. Also, his theme song sounds like Bob's Burgers music. And Stone Cold comes out, and then The Undertaker comes out. So,
to much surprise and ballyhoo,
he's going to keep things in check here. Foley's beating up Stone Cold on the outside quite a bit, and Vince changes it to a no disqualification match.
JR is very upset about it.
Yes.
Since when?
I've also never seen anyone take the like clothesline into the crowd from sitting on the barricade. It's usually over the barricade, but Foley just like goes straight down from it. And they end up on the ramp, and Vince gets on the mic again and says it's a false count anywhere match.
Since when?
They start fighting on the cars in the set, and then they end up back in the ring, and Foley hits a double arm DDT on the chair, but Stone Cold kicks out. And then Stone Cold hits Foley with the chair, but Vince refuses to count. And Stone Cold goes and argues with him, and then Foley hits Vince with a chair. So Stone Cold hits a stunner. A new ref comes out, but Pat Patterson takes him out because only Vince can do it.
Only Vince's hand.
Both Patterson and Briscoe get chokeslammed through the tables.
Great shit. The crowd's eating it up.
Also, I'm pretty sure Patterson at one point called Gerald Briscoe the next Jim Thorpe in his intro as well.
He did. And they said, Briscoe is the only Native American in the WWE Hall of Fame. And I think they said, was it Wahoo's got ours? Who'd they say? One of the other guys was like, no, it's not. He's not an Indian. I got to think who it was. Oh, Chief J Strongbow. Oh, yeah. That's who it was. Yeah, Chief J isn't an Indian.
So Stone Cold hits a stunner again, pulls Vince over, raises his arm 3 times to count the fall on his own, and that's it. It's a fun match.
Very fun match.
Really saved the show, because it's not a very good show.
It's not, but yeah. I mean, this is kind of just how most Attitude Era pay-per-views go, although I will say, after this one, they start to go on a run. 98 for pay-per-views is, I think, a little bit disrespected compared to how just awful 1999 becomes. But 98, you know, I think this is the best WWF title match of the year 1998,
yeah,
in my opinion. I don't know how that reads, because I know Austin Taker at SummerSlam 98 is a thrill, but I just like this one a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
It's overbooked, but it's fun overbooking.
Yeah,
that's fair. You guys have anything else about Over the Edge here?
No, I mean, it's a one match show, and the match delivers. That's great. I love it. It is definitely the fun part of the Attitude Era that like you can look back on and be like, oh, that was funny and cool and everything. But yeah, the rest of the show, you're like, did I really watch all these people? Also one thing too was, where was Ken Shamrock? Because he's on the like promotional thing for it, like it's like his whole picture on like as the thing for it. He's nowhere to be found.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. I didn't really consider that, but you're right. I mean,
which is also weird because he wins King of the Ring literally the next month.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost like, was he supposed to be the one for, like, was the thing with Sable always supposed to be that way, or was, like, Shamrock going to do it, or I don't know. It was just weird to see when I was pulling up the pay-per-view, I was like, okay, what Shamrock matches on this, because I didn't see him on the card.
Yeah, because he's still, like, you know, feuding with the Nation Domination. He'll do it pretty much the rest of the year, and so why not have him come out at any point and, you know?
Yeah, he was like, just in, I think the month before, it was him, Blackman, and Farouk versus the Nation in the sixth man, so.
And then a King of the Ring beats most of them, I believe, on the way to winning it, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just surprised. I was like, why is he playing such a big role? It's like one of those where it's like, oh, you know, Vader, the In Your House, It's Time or whatever. Oh, yeah. It's like he's nowhere on the show. And it's like, oh, yeah, we didn't plan on that happening.
Yeah. No, that's it, though.
Yeah, so that'll do it for this month's Retro Review podcast. We will be digging into the archives in June, of course. We're still deliberating on what we're going to be watching and talking about by the end of the month, but you will know that as soon as we do. As always, be sure to subscribe to the Barber's Chair Network's Patreon, patreon.com/barberschairnetwork, $5 or $10. $10 will get you everything, including the WWE Top 25, which we'll be talking about later this week as the month of May is wrapped up. Of course, the new Ruthless Aggression dropped earlier this week, where we talked about the Ultimate Warrior documentaries, as well as a pretty significant week in the year 2005, as we continue to build towards the return of the WWE draft, which of course is done very differently than how it was ever done afterwards, or even before. And of course, you know, you can check out all the Barber's Chair Net podcasts on SoundCloud, iTunes, and Spotify. So, you know, you can always check those out there. Random Acts of Podcasts, New 4040 Clubs, Summer Sessions as well. I could go on and on, but I will not. So, for Rob and Chris, this is Chris Novak, signing off here. Of course, I'm at Chris M. Novak. You can find Chris Osborne at Hitman99, Rob at Robert O'Neill 31, and we will be back at the end of the month.